Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the award-winning Off the Wall podcast, a Cable Facts Award for the best podcast in the country. Not to pat ourselves on the back, breaking our wrist to do it, but thought I'd throw that out there. If you haven't seen it on Twitter yet, Joe and I are very proud of that honor. And this week, we actually couldn't have done it without the guest we have this week. That is Seth Everett of NBC Sports Network. He's also an MLB insider, host of one of the hosts of Spreecast, and also a ginormous Devils fan. Seth, thank you for coming on. Also, on Twitter, he is at Seth_Everett. If you're not following him, you need to follow this man. So,
and
Seth,
if you follow me, I'll know when you're listening to the podcast.
There you go.
See? I need 10 followers at 3 a.m. tonight.
Okay, 10 followers at 3 a.m. If Seth picks up 10 followers at 3 a.m., we know we're doing our job.
Right,
Jeez,
and then you'll
better
know.
Better be so, more than 10.
And tweet at me and say, hey, it's 3 a.m., I'm listening to Chris, Joe, and me.
There you go. All right, and it was at the beginning of the podcast, so you have no reason why you cannot
do
that.
Because no one listens to the end.
Exactly. They've had enough of us after about 5 minutes. So let's get to the meat and potatoes quick before they change it. All right, Seth, mentioned you're a huge Devil fan. So how did that come to pass?
It's actually very cool. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and my family moved to New Jersey the same day the Devils moved from Colorado.
Oh, wow.
And the way I knew that, I was like 8 and my sister was 5. And you know when you move, and especially when you're moving into a house, it's moving company.
Mm-hmm.
And my job as the 8-year-old older brother was to keep 5-year-old sister out of the moving company's way. The way my father said it was, as long as no one puts a couch on your sister, we're taking you for ice cream. And it was Carvel ice cream. I was so excited.
Yeah, I remember.
I get to the Carvel at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm 8 years old. And it was the first time I saw a newspaper that wasn't the New York Post.
Wow.
So I didn't know that newspapers folded that way.
Yes.
And it was the Asbury Park Press, and the headline was, Pro Hockey Coming to New Jersey. Jersey will have its own team. And I'm like, to my dad, I said, what in the world is that? And I had never seen a hockey game before, so I can honestly say I am a Devils fan since minute one. And that's the only team, because when I've covered leagues, I try to be as objective as possible. For example, I don't claim to have a baseball team. I don't claim to have a football team. But I do have a hockey team, and it's the Devils.
Okay. Well, let me give you my little quick story. We're around the same age. In fact, we're probably the same age if you just celebrated your 20th high school reunion, because I just did as well last year. You might be a year younger than me. But I was 7. Driving in my uncle's hatchback Honda. I'll never forget this. He's listening to a hockey game on the radio. Who are you listening to, Uncle Cheech? The Rangers. Bam. Ranger fan. Done.
Well, that's it.
In the books.
And you become a fan based on who your family is.
Exactly.
Nobody who's listening to your show chose what teams they root for. You don't get to pick.
No.
That's not the way it works. I actually was talking to an Islander fan. And I know there's only 12 of them, but I don't. I'm not
and one of
punish.
Them works for yes.
I'm not punishing the poor sap, but he had some dumb story about his grandfather and whatnot. You realize that there are college graduates that were not alive the last time the Islanders won?
Hey, you know what? They had a decent run in the 80s.
Yeah,
they had a decent run.
But believe me, we're only talking about contenders here. This is an off-the-wall podcast.
Yes,
you don't win awards talking about the Islanders.
Right, but the Devils were still the Rockies when I made that formative choice in my life.
That's right.
They came here. I can't say I rooted for them. You know, maybe the one time I rooted for them, and it was as a Ranger fan when I was living in California, and they were in the Cup Finals against the Stars.
And everybody
at the bar was rooting for the Stars, and I took my license out, and it was still my Jersey license. So I was like, I'm from Jersey, I'm rooting for the Devils.
Sure.
You know, that Jersey attitude takes over, but I'm not ashamed to admit I did root for him in that Stanley Cup final just because everybody at the bar was being nasty towards my great home state, the Garden State. But anyway, let's get into this series. Tomorrow, we're taping this Thursday right after Game 5. Tomorrow is a huge Game 6. And listen, I just want to get your thoughts. First and foremost, I think my gut is telling me the way the Rangers lost that game, Game 5 last night, being down 3-0, coming all the way back to tie it at 3, I just don't think in my gut, it wouldn't surprise me if they won it, but I just think this is over in 6 with the Devils heading off to take on the Kings.
Well, I had said before the series started I like New Jersey in 6. But I had said, I'm one of those, this is what I can prove to all those obnoxious Ranger fans, I'm not an obnoxious Devils fan. I said, I think Devils in 6, but if it goes 7, I don't like the idea of beating Lundqvist in his building in a Game 7. I don't think he's going to do it.
Unless he played like he played last night.
Well, it's possible, but not in a Game 7. And so I thought that the Devils' best chance is exactly this scenario. I thought it was going to be 2-2 after 4, and I thought we'd win Game 5. Now, I didn't think there'd be a 3-0 lead. I didn't think they would blow the 3-0 lead.
I don't think anybody thought either one of those things was going to happen.
Joe knows exactly how giddy I was when it's 3-0, and you're surrounded because you know that press box in Madison Square Garden, and I was working for Wins at the time, so I was trying to be as objective as possible.
Right.
And what I do when I'm sitting at Madison Square Garden, I put my iPhone and I blast music. Because the fever pitch is so loud, and I can't listen to the knuckleheads that I sit near in the press box. So I just put music on, and I zone out. When the third goal was scored, I swear to you, I had to lower the volume because it was too loud. That was the first time all playoffs that I had to lower the volume.
The Garden
it got
was that
so
quiet.
Quiet.
Yeah.
Now, I will say the greatest moment that had nothing to do with the game. Now, how many – that building seats 18-5. Is that
yeah,
accurate?
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, 16,000 people were chanting Marty. That was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
I was going to tweet something about that last night, but I just decided not to. But, Devils fans could have just started chanting scoreboard. It was just unbelievable.
But at the time, see, they started it when it was 3-2.
I remember.
And I thought, those guys were idiots. But then when Gavrik scores in the first minute of the third, mm-hmm. by minute 3 of the third period, that whole building was chanting Marty.
Well,
that was wild. Marty actually said that he was impressed that they were able to do that in unison. Well, like, it was amazing. I had never seen that. I still think concerts are better than anything the Rangers do.
You brought up the goalies. Let me go back to Lundqvist. I equate Henrik Lundqvist, you're a baseball guy just like I am. I equate Lundqvist to like a shutdown starting pitcher, okay? Mm-hmm. And everyone that you want to look at in Major League Baseball that's a shutdown starting pitcher, they blow up every once in a while. They're allowed. They get to do that.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If you'll make this analogy, Lundqvist is to Roy Halladay what Brodeur is to Mariano Rivera?
Pretty much. I would say that...
Best at their position.
Yes. I would say that, yeah. And that's exactly what the Rangers...
And best in the game today for the first two.
Yeah. And it's exactly what the Rangers don't have, and that's a closer. If they had a closer, this series would be over right now. If they had someone who could bury the puck when it comes to the front of the net, even though it's on edge, Marian Gaborik, the series would be over. They just don't have... The first line got their first point last night. It's just, it's unbelievable that that's happening in the series. But let me go back to my baseball analogy really quick. Mm-hmm. The one you had was tremendous, but I just want to finish my thought by saying Lundqvist has the opportunity. He gets a pass. I am not blaming that loss on Henrik Lundqvist. He's allowed to blow up every once in a while. It's the offense's job that when their starter, who gives them everything in the world, every time he steps on that mound, he should be bailed out by that offense. He has had them in this position throughout the season, throughout the playoffs. If Henrik Lundqvist is not between the pipes, this team is not this far. They're not playing the Devils right now. They might be out against the Senators in the first round if he isn't in goal. I think the offense finally in Game 6, and they dominated the Devils last night. Okay, they did in every facet. It was the first game they did that.
Well,
but the offense has to bail him out when he has a game like that. Your thoughts on that?
Well, there were a couple things. I mean, the Rangers played their best 30 minutes. So far in the series, the Rangers had been outplaying the Devils for 20 minutes. And that's trying to be objective as I can. Through the first four games, that's 12 periods.
Absolutely.
The Devils won 9 of them. And that's kind of wild if you think about those kinds of parallels. In game different. In game 5, we had something a little bit different in that after they got out to the 3-0 lead, I thought it was amazing how the Rangers didn't respond when Tortorella called the timeout. I thought that was the strangest part of this entire thing. Then you flip this and you go one step further in that once it got 3-0, the Rangers started playing like they had a gun to their head.
Yeah.
Like they literally started playing exactly the way. Steven Gionta was left open in the slot on the first goal. You never saw Steven Gionta from the middle of the from the end of the first period all the way through about the 10-minute mark of the third. And when they got the Gaborik goal, they still were playing with that abandon. For some reason, at the 10-minute mark, they just stopped.
I
and
noticed
New Jersey
that
was
too.
Able to capitalize on that.
Yeah, I noticed that too, Seth. And Joe Auriemma here. Seth, you and I were talking throughout the game on Twitter last night. And, in fact, you and I stopped tweeting around the same time.
Well, because you got me nervous because you told me I was a jinx.
But I did say this. I said I felt like it was Florida Game 3 all over again. I really had that feeling last night, man. Just feeling when they scored that third goal, I felt so deflated. I know you did, but that's the mark of a good team, though. They kept playing. Again, at that 10-minute mark, they took over domination of the game, and they scored the goal that they needed to score. Like I said to Chris earlier, Seth, the Devils have dominated this series, and they split the first four games. They needed, in a game like this where the Rangers did have the upper hand, to steal one back, and they did that last night.
Well, there were a couple things. I said when it was 3-2, in the second intermission, I said next goal wins.
Yes.
And I really did think that if the Rangers tied it, they were going to win it. I also thought we were going to overtime because we hadn't gone to overtime in this series, and I just said, wait a second, this is the NHL. How are we not going to overtime?
Right.
So I thought that. And I will admit, and this is my confession, my album ran out. And I actually was looking for something else to motivate me for the final 4 minutes of the period. And I missed Carter's goal.
Mm.
And you could hear the decibel level. It was like fever pitch, fever pitch, fever pitch. Oh.
Oh.
And I went, what? What happened? And so in the press box, you had the monitors, which are about 30 seconds behind. So
right.
I saw the play, and I said, holy crap. The Carter goal was the last thing I was expecting, whereas if you look at the way the play was going, you could understand how the Rangers got their three and the Devils got their
absolutely.
Three. The Carter goal was the only one I didn't get, and at that moment, then you start to think about 94.
Yes.
And I do want to tell you guys that in 94, I was interning at WFAN, and at the time, FAN was the Rangers station.
Right.
And there was not a person in the building, in that stupid building in Queens, that was a Devils fan.
In Astoria. So I remember that building.
I got mocked. Like, there was not a person there that didn't mock me because I was the only Jersey fan there. Like, you know, I heard all of it. You know, you parades in a parking lot, all the
yep.
garbage.
Yep.
And it was funny because that was a tragedy. I mean, that 94 was disgusting. But Brodeur writes something very interesting in his book. He says that the 0-1 loss to Colorado stings a lot more than 94.
Well, it was
because you could argue 94 built that franchise.
94 built that franchise, and 2001 it really was a stinging loss because they were the better team, and he lost head-to-head in his one shot against Patrick Waugh.
Right.
He did. It was his one shot to beat Patrick Waugh. And they had the series. I was at Game 6. I was there. I was sitting in front of Peter Jennings and his family, the late Peter Jennings
wow.
and his family. This is a true story because they were Colorado fans, and I was completely mocking them throughout the entire game. And at the end of the game, his little, kids started mocking me, and they had every right to because I was a complete jerk through the entire game.
You guys want to hear a great Patrick Waugh story?
Yes.
In 97, I was the pre- and post-game host for the Avalanche. And the Avalanche were run about as ass-backwards as I've ever seen an organization run.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided they had an internal meeting, and they decided without telling me that if in a Game 7, it was round 2 against the Edmonton Oilers, And if the Avalanche won, I was going on the ice to interview the MVP of the series. This is in the old McNichols Arena.
Oh, yeah.
But nobody told me, so wearing loafers was probably not the best move I had made.
Uh-oh.
So the whole game, all I'm scared about is whether or not I'm going to fall. So they hand me a wireless mic, these clunky headphones, and now I'm going to be piped through the PA system. So I'm on the ice, and I'm walking. I'm walking, praying for dear life that I don't wipe out. And Patrick Waugh is the MVP. He comes over and sees me like moving like an old man, and he snows me. I don't know if I'm describing that correctly.
No, I know exactly what he did.
So now my pants are soaking wet.
Yeah, he...
So, but the play-by-play guys don't know that, so they're still going to hand it to me, and they're ready to go down ice level. Ice level, Seth Evers standing by, go, and I can hear that I'm on in the public address. So now I'm interviewing Patrick Waugh. Patrick, great series. Okay, it was a great series, blah, 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 blah. We talk for maybe 3 minutes, and I go, all right, guys, back upstairs. And I throw it to the play-by-play guy, the venerable Mike Haynes, and at that moment, Patrick Waugh leans over and looks at his left wrist and goes, can you let go of my arm, please? I didn't realize it, but subconsciously I was holding on for dear life. I needed something to hold on, and I was holding
You were
on.
Propping yourself onto Patrick Waugh.
It's hysterical.
So, Seth, you and I share a mutual love of the New Jersey Devils. I've been a Devil fan since the mid-80s, since I can remember, you know, being, you know, going to my first hockey game, and, you know, Dougie Brown being my favorite player. And, you
Doug
know,
Brown, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I just, I you know, I look at this series, and I said to somebody the other day, and I know Colorado stung, but, you know, that series 18 years ago, I was only 13 years old, and I really...
I'm a young pup.
I'm 31 now, and I just remember just clinging on. That was the first real hockey experience. I had been to the Devils and Penguins series where they lost, you know, 4-3, and that stung. But the Rangers, that series stung, and Messier coming into that arena and you know doing what he did, and then holding on to hope that they were going to win that series. It broke my heart, and I'm still clinging on to that series. And this a win on Friday night would really, really go far for I think a lot of Devil fans who feel the same way.
Well, there's definitely something to that. I think that, you know, going home for Game 6 and in your building now, a building that you can finally embrace as your own.
Yes.
Although there's a major flaw with the Prudential Center. We should talk about that for a second. But I think that the pressure is squarely on them. And the fact that it's still Brodeur, and the fact that Brodeur hasn't retired yet, and that this franchise hasn't moved on yet, is fascinating. And when a lot of people thought that when the lockout and the season got canceled, that the sports new rules had passed Lou Lamoriello by.
Yeah,
there was a lot of there was a big theory about that. And up until this season, there had not been a great playoff moment in that new building, considering the Ranger loss and then the. Carolina just got debacle.
Yes, I was at that debacle.
And the funny thing was, and I talked to some people in the press box during, I think it was Game 4, where we were saying that the Carolina loss didn't hurt as much as the Ranger loss for this one reason. Carolina loss, it was like a mortuary. Like, everybody just couldn't believe it, what was going on.
It
but at least everyone
so
liked
quick.
One team.
Right.
When they lost in the first playoff series, the first year of the Prudential Center, they were Ranger fans, and I remember I was living in the city at that time. I remember going to Newark Penn Station just plain miserable, getting to the train station because you were in a sea of blue in your building.
Yeah.
And that was offensive. So I understood why the franchise did what they did. I mean, they looked petty because the Nationals did the same thing, and they got mocked for it too. But the fact of the matter is that in those two games, games 3 and 4, I would argue it was 80-20 New Jersey as far as the fan base. So I think they got what they had wished for.
Yeah, and it was rocking. It really was rocking. Seth, like you said, the pressure is squarely on the New Jersey Devils to try and close this out. A couple of points here. One, do you think that the way the Devils won this game, you know, essentially getting out to that big lead, you know, losing the lead and then winning on a late goal is more devastating to the Rangers than if it was a blowout? And also, you know, what's your take on this game, Seth? What do you think needs to be done and what will happen?
You know, I'd like to say first goal, but that's kind of obvious. I think that's the one thing. This is why I love being a hockey fan, and I think that people who cover hockey sometimes make stuff up because what needs to happen is someone needs to step up. And I made the comment on Twitter last night, and I went on a couple of radio shows, and I had said flat out, I think the biggest challenge for the Rangers is that there's nobody in their dressing room that can step up and provide the leadership. I'm not talking about a guarantee. I'm not saying you need to start making guarantees, but you have to provide the leadership that wins you a game six in the conference finals against your rival.
I think it's Ryan Callahan. I do.
But see, it's funny because his name came up. If Ryan Callahan steps up, I would like to see it. But to me, he doesn't come off like that guy.
I think you're going to see it in game six. If the Rangers win, I think it's going to be Callahan.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the spokesman for that team really is their goalie.
Right.
And if you think back to 94, that wasn't the case.
You always had Messier.
You never had – Richter never had to say a word. The other thing is I find it easier. Richter was a rival, but he was such a good guy. It was hard to root against him. Lundqvist is such an easy person, and it's not that Lundqvist is a bad guy. He just is such an easy guy to root against, and their coach is an absolute jerk.
Their coach,
I'm using language because I'm trying to be a pro here, but Tortorella is a clown. Mark Crawford, when I worked for the Avalanche, I thought he was psychopathic, and Tortorella is right up there. I'll tell you a real quick funny story about Mark Crawford.
I had a feeling that was coming.
Just to show you how crazy he is. The Avalanche had won seven in a row, and they lose on hockey night in Canada to the Maple Leafs. And no, we didn't know this, but he is from Toronto, so it really upset him. It was just like they laid an egg. They didn't show up that night. And it was a regular season game. Who cared?
Right.
And he shows up in the post-game press conference, and this one radio station, KOA, they on Saturday nights, they send an intern to get audio. So this one kid, he's like 19, goes to the University of Denver. He's sitting there, and he's nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And Crawford comes out and he goes, "You guys better make this quick because I'm pissed." And the kid starts shaking. Crawford looks him right in the eye and goes, "Did I scare you?" Like, that's crazy. That's bona fide. Like, at that point, I'm like, this guy, he's Bill Bixby about to turn into Lou Ferrigno. Like, crazy. And that's what I get from Tortorella.
"You won't like me when I'm angry." Thank God he didn't have green contacts. That kid would have needed a diaper. Anyway, let's put you on the spot really quick. So we've kind of discussed this already, but gut feeling, I think it's over tomorrow night. I think it's over Friday. I think the Devils win and they, you know, skate off into the sunset to take on the Kings. And I also think, Seth, I want to get your thoughts on this. Joe and I talked before we started taping this. We went out to a power lunch today, Joe and I.
Really?
Yes. It wasn't really, but.
Did you guys hit P.F. Chang's?
No. No. It did cross my mind. It did cross my mind.
My favorite place in Stanford?
No, but we went to our favorite pub.
Okay.
Southport Brewing Company, SBC.
Hey, there you go.
We had very delicious.
Get a sponsor right
yes,
there.
Yes, very delicious sandwiches, some free advertising. But this is something I wanted to throw out there. I think, in my head, whoever wins the Eastern Conference Final, and I'm not saying the Kings aren't a great hockey team. They are. I just believe the style of play that the Kings play and that either the Devils or the Rangers play, they differ so much. Even though the Devils aren't the defensive team they used to be, the Rangers actually are. In fact, it's the polar opposite of 94. The Devils are kind of what the Rangers were with their offensive firepower, and the Rangers are the defensive-minded team this time around. But I think the style of play, Western Conference and Eastern Conference, I think a finals between the Devils or Rangers and the Kings goes to the Eastern Conference. What do you think about that?
You know, I think so. It's really funny. You know how you fill out, I'm sure you guys did this as well, you fill out the media credential form for the
right.
league, for
mm-hmm.
the finals? Well, I filled it out, and a friend of mine, she comes over to me. She works for the NHL Media Relations, and she says, "By the way, you know, you filled out your form incorrectly." She goes, "What do you?" I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, Well, generally, when you're a New York area-based broadcaster, reporter, whatnot, generally you click on all the local area teams so that you can get a credential no matter who wins. She goes, you only checked on Jersey. I said, do you think... I said, I've neglected baseball for a quarter of this season already. I said, if this game one is in Madison Square Garden, do you think I'm going to be anywhere near this river?
Oh boy!
It was just the kind of thing, and the thing that I'm having a lot of fun with, because last year I did the pre and post for the Phillies,
right?
And so a lot of my Twitter followers are Philadelphia people, and I have a blast with them. But I hate the Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
The Flyers are like my 1A. Like the Rangers are my number one, but
of course,
I think the Flyers
are everybody's 1A.
And in Philadelphia, there's this wacky belief that if you like one, you have to like them all. Like, I have nothing against the Philadelphia Eagles. I could care less. But I hate the Flyers so much. I walked into that building for game two. I had some meetings down there, and I actually went to game two of the Devils Flyers series.
Right.
And they were giving away these disgustingly vomit-colored T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And this little boy was trying to get a T-shirt for his brother, because I guess his brother was sick and couldn't come to the game.
Yeah.
And I gave the kid my T-shirt. I said, I'm giving you my T-shirt.
Good
you
job out of you.
I said, because if you're, I said, I'm sorry that you're going to grow up to be a big Flyers fan, but at least your brother will be with you.
Oh my God. All right. Well, joking aside, I truly believe that the Devils or Rangers win the Stanley Cup. Whoever gets there
maybe.
From the East,
I just think
that's the case. Before we move on to baseball, but. I bring up Seth. I'm glad you brought up the Flyers series, because if you want evidence of my hypothesis here, that's it. The Flyers, how many goals did the Flyers score in the first round of the NHL playoffs? They scored a ton of goals. Okay, their offense was very, not just, it was very prolific in the first round. The Devils shut them down. After that first game, as Joe just said, the forecheck was unbelievable. It's exactly what they've been doing to the Rangers in every game. Like you said, the only time the Rangers have dominated this series was for 30 minutes in Game 5, and they lost.
No, you make an excellent point. You make an absolutely excellent point. The one thing I would say is the way this series is going to go, I'm telling you, the opportunity for New Jersey is right here. And that if if they lose Game 6, I do not like them in Game 7. And that's not the fan in me thinking. That's as much as I can base whatever analysis I'm trying to put together for this, because ultimately I look at New Jersey and they have to find a way. Now, they could go three overtimes. I don't know what Game 6 is going to be like. And the guy,
three over. My heart can't take it anymore.
Well, the one guy
can the Rangers just win by three goals?
Well, the one guy that you're looking at from New Jersey standpoint, because you mentioned Callahan, and I thought you made a good point. Even though I don't necessarily know that he's going to step up, we'll see.
Okay.
But the guy I'm looking at is Kovalchuk.
Okay.
And
yeah.
It's not Parise, because Parise's in a weird spot. Parise has to realize that could be his last game there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have been told, because doing stuff at NBC, you talk to all the hockey guys.
Right.
You know, the NBC Sports Network, the hockey guys are climbing the walls in there.
Keith Jones, and, Roenick.
Right, Roenick and Keith Jones and Kevin
Milbury.
Weeks. Milbury, Mike Keenan's up there, all these yahoos. And what what happens as a result is they were telling me, here's an analogy. You were making analogies before.
I'm very
Parise
analogous
to the Devils,
today.
Parise to the Devils is worse than Reyes and the Mets. That the financial situation, which we haven't really brought up, the financial situation for that New Jersey franchise is in such dire straits that the income-to-debt ratio is such a bad way, and they don't own a TV network like the Wilpons do, that despite the fact that now that the Wilpons are out from under the Madoff scandal, that in reality, the Devils are in worse financial shape than the Wilpons, so that Parise is a foregone conclusion, whereas the Mets tried to create an air of mystery. Would they offer him something? How would they handle it? There was a chance. Met fans on September 15th last year thought there was a chance he would stay. No Devil fan thinks Parise is going
to. Well, listen, Parise will probably come to the Rangers and then disappear.
Well, and it's funny.
That's
it's
the way
funny
things happen.
It's funny because Parise's been linked to the Rangers, the Red Wings, and the Minnesota Wild. Now, the fan in me wants him to go to the Minnesota Wild because he's from there, and I love it when guys go home like that. I think that would be like I was the guy who thought Sabathia should go sign for the Oakland A's.
Right.
You know, like you're the big San Francisco guy. Go show me.
Right.
And. What winds up happening as a result is, watch, the Rangers will get involved. Hey, they signed Scott Gomez and Bobby Hajek, but just a matter of time.
Hey, Seth, you know, early in the series, I believe when the Devils tied it up at 1-1, mm-hmm. Chris Sheeran sent you a tweet that said, pipe down. I believe that was and I don't know if you saw, but after game three, he made a comment, and I came valiantly to your defense and came back with a pipe down.
And what did I say? What did I say?
Yeah, you said
it. I said touche.
You said touche, yes.
Well, but the thing is, and I don't want to group Chris in, but I'm going to let you do it. You see, what happens is there is such a thing as obnoxious Ranger fans.
Yeah, and
obnoxious
but
Ranger fans.
I am
obnoxious
so not
that.
And you can ask Auriemma. I've been very good.
He's been good.
Game one was crazy. There's a dude who does a show on Mad Dog's channel who literally was tweeting at me and saying, you know, the series is over. And I said, give me a break.
Yeah,
I said,
so was the Flyers series after one game. That was over, too. Joey's cousins could attest to that. And now, where are the Flyers? They're going to dig up Gerald Ford.
It was amazing.
Seth, I told them they
amazing.
Haven't won since the Ford administration.
The
where does this arrogance
good,
come from?
At that point, I thought about it. And when it was 3:28 left, and people are asking me what I think of the game, and I'm like, if I say something right now, I will never forgive myself.
Oh, boy. Okay. Just one
I'm
more.
I'm telling you, Twitter has become the world's town hall.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the best description I've heard of it so far to this point. You hit the nail right on the head. One more hockey question, because you're such a big Devils guy. I just brought this up with Joey, too, before we started. Do you think if the Devils get by the Rangers, go on, they win the Cup, or regardless if they win or lose, do you think Martin Brodeur walks away after this year?
You know, he's in the final year of a contract. Let's go through the facts. It makes perfect sense for him to walk away. The one precursor I would say is I don't think it's our place in the media, having not played.
Right.
I don't think it's ever our place in the media to tell a player to hang it up. I never told Ricky Henderson. I will say this. I did have a long sit-down interview with Jamie Moyer when we talked about retirement. That was 13 years ago.
Wow.
That's a true story. I have it on mini disc somewhere.
Wow.
Jamie Moyer was a guest of mine.
I'd love to listen to that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, if I found a mini disc player, sure. And
obsolete? Is it on laser discs?
It was like
Betamax.
Those recorders. The recorders with the supposedly rechargeable battery, but it would like play for 5 minutes. But the thing about Brodeur that you have to acknowledge, and this is the one thing, is everyone I talk to that knows him a lot better than I do says that he wants to do it more. Hmm. And the franchise, because of the financial straits and the fact that Parise is going to walk, and they're going to need a captain, and they're going to need somebody else to be the face of the franchise. And I don't think they think they have that guy, despite the presence of Kovalchuk.
Right.
That I think ultimately Brodeur is going to come back. Now, that was before the playoffs. I went to one of your favorite Stamford, Connecticut places for lunch with Kevin Weeks, and he kind of said, I talk to Marty all the time. He's not walking away from this sport.
Wow.
And so I don't know, but that was before this playoff run. I kind of thought, you know, when the Florida series was going on, I kind of thought that they beat him up enough that maybe he would tell him that the game is starting to get too fast for him. But that was before the Flyer series. So I couldn't answer that question. The one thing, there's two things wrong with the Prudential Center. We can end the hockey on this.
The sight lines?
No. The sight lines are fine. I hate the way they have the banners hanging.
Okay.
Don't put the retire numbers in two locations.
Yeah.
If you look at that building, they put the cup banners on one side, all the other ones, the conference titles, division titles, mm-hmm. whatnot, You put those on the other side. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
You put your little Seton Hall and your temporary Liberty.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that they took the Nets banners down the minute the Nets were done with that game. I did find that personally very funny. And then you have these retired numbers. And the one thing I would implore the Prudential Center is pick one location and put one banner before you retire Marty's number.
Hmm.
That was my one rule. Now, there's one other thing about the Prudential Center, and this is just for the men out there because I can't attest for the women. Have you been to the men's room in any men's room location in the Prudential Center?
A general population or the media area?
It doesn't matter. Anywhere.
Yes.
Have you noticed what's on the handles of said urinals?
No.
There is very fancy engraved devil logos on the handles.
Okay.
To which I respond with, there's no way that's cheaper than Auto Flush.
So take some money out of the bathroom, is what you're saying, and put it into the team.
Like, you decided to engrave. Like, what did they do? They took a bunch of handles, went to Things Remembered, and got, and got
Brunswick
devil
Square
logo.
Mall.
Like, devil logo. So why do I want to stare at something I don't want to touch?
Yeah.
When all you'd have to do is get these little auto flush devices. Oh, they're
boy.
Clearly a lot cheaper than any kind of engraved anything.
Seth, this
that
is why
my
we
biggest
have you
gripe
on.
With the Prudential Center.
This is one of the main reasons we have you on. Oh, that's tremendous. All right, let's keep the hijinks going with baseball.
Okay.
You know, you said you've pretty much excommunicated baseball.
I'm teasing. I just haven't been tweeting about baseball because
I know what you meant. I know what you meant.
Infatuated with this hockey.
Because of the hockey that's going on right now. And if the Rangers and Devils weren't in it, we'd probably be full tilt baseball
sure.
as well. But obviously we're keeping our eye on it because our jobs pretty much depend on it. There are four teams right now that are in last place or second to last place. And their payrolls are pretty lofty.
Sure.
Out of these four teams, it's the Yankees, it's the Red Sox, the Phillies, and there's one more that I'm missing.
The Tigers.
Well, the Angels, too.
And the Angels.
Yes.
Okay. Out of those five teams, okay, which one of those teams do you think is going to rebound by the end of the season? I know it's still early,
too. That's not how I thought you were going to ask that question. I thought which of those teams is most screwed.
Okay, well,
because most
we can go both ways.
That's
yeah.
the Angels. The Angels are most screwed.
Why is that?
The reason is because of the economics of the whole thing. When they signed Pujols, they did so because they thought the timing was perfect because at the time their crosstown rivals were mired in an ownership controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And to steal a line from my old friend Mikhail Prokhorov, they wanted to turn Dodger fans into Angel fans. And they thought this was the first time they could actually do that. What has happened has gone horribly wrong. Pujols is not hitting. They're questioning the hitting coach.
And the Dodgers are running off with the West.
The Dodgers are running off with the West. Kemp is doing everything Pujols was supposed to do.
Exactly.
And what's happened as a result is you've lost the war. Whether or not they come back. Now, by no means is the division over, even though Texas is clearly the best team in the sport right now. But the division's not over. Do you know how hard it is for a player? I talked to Torrey Hunter about this recently. And he said, you know how hard it is to come to the ballpark every day chasing?
Wow.
You're chasing forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Angels are more screwed. The Phillies can rattle off eight in a row, even though I don't think they would. The Phillies could do that. So could New York, and so could Detroit. But the Angels, eight in a row is not enough. And that's a bitter pill to swallow. As far as what team rebounds, I still think it would be New York and Detroit. Because ultimately, you know, I go way back with Manny Acta. I love the guy as much as a heterosexual male can love another. But the one thing I don't know about the Indians is whether or not – see, I say this about the Indians and the Orioles. Just because they've had great success, and I said this to Buck Showalter, that doesn't necessarily mean you automatically translate into projections. What I mean by that is the Orioles are winning games, right? The Orioles are starting to become relevant.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, you know, it's fun to go to Camden Yards. And by the way, the hat's phenomenal.
Oh, I love it. I mentioned that to Kenny Singleton before the before the season started, and he said, well, just because they went back to him doesn't mean they're going to play like we used to play, but actually they are.
That's a pretty good line.
So.
And the one interesting thing about it, though, is it was when you watch the Orioles play, the Nationals are the same way, you don't project into win totals. So, for example, I don't think there's an automatic assumption that you can honestly believe that these franchises are going to sustain, so that I'm not going to tell you the Orioles are going to win 88 games.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you they're not going to win 95 games. I'm also not going to tell you they're not going to win 75 games. So what happens to that? The projections are topsy-turvy. That's why I think for Detroit, if you think about who Detroit's playing for the next 75% of the season, Detroit's going to beat up on teams like the White Sox and the Twins. With their pitching and that lineup,
right,
they're not going to respond?
Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to come back and they're going to bounce back. And with Verlander anchoring that rotation, you know, the Tigers, there's nowhere to go but up for them.
Now, to New York's point, the thing with New York that's been amazing, it's not so much just that they didn't get anything for Pineda. And for the record, last time I think you guys had me on, I defended that trade. I still think I would – if I'm Brian Cashman, I make that trade again.
In a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
You have to make that trade.
That was one of the most fun days, the Pineda trade, when I went on KJR in Seattle and WFAN in New York back-to-back in a half hour, and I never ripped and applauded a trade. Like, when have you seen a baseball trade that has no financial ramifications whatsoever?
Yeah,
you've never seen a baseball trade that was that one-sided. It's not my fault Pineda wouldn't go to a salad bar before he showed up in Tampa, and then the next thing you know, he hurts his shoulder. That's notwithstanding. But the issue is, I'm very concerned about Hughes. I'm very concerned about Kuroda, because what happens is when it gets hot, you're going to need innings from these guys.
Yeah.
And you can't be muckety-muck with these inconsistent starts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go out of a start hearing, well, I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from Hughes. That's like Gilmesh. Gilmesh is not a prospect anymore.
Not in the middle of the season, like, you don't want to hear that.
These guys are veterans already.
Right.
Well, enough with that.
7 years with Hughes.
Right. And then there's the offense. And when I hear stuff about breathing and Teixeira, I don't speculate on injuries. I don't think it's appropriate. But that, I'm concerned about that. I don't understand what's going on with Mark Teixeira. And the other one is Alex, who you know I have the history with.
Yeah.
Alex is going to look like Hal Baines before the season's over. Like, when he's done with this contract, he's going to walk bow-legged because of his knees. Like, he's not going to be able to be Alex Rodriguez anymore. And I think what's going to happen ultimately is, forget the fact that you owe him $160 million still. The fact is, did you see his face when the media was asking him about being intentionally walked, about Cano being intentionally walked to pitch to him?
Yeah.
And you see how he started mentioning all the reporters by first name?
Mm-hmm.
You know, only retired players do that.
That's a glimpse into the future, unfortunately. I mean, and that's what these contracts, these huge contracts, Pujols got one. Joey Votto got one. Votto's, you know, a lot younger. But
right.
I think these huge contracts that you see are going to be gone by the – I think they're going to be a thing of the past, much like the dodo. I think they're going to be extinct because
I
think people are going to see, general managers, owners are going to see – that you just can't invest that much money into one player. You just can't do it. Now, I have one more baseball for you before I give you to Joe.
Well, and one tag note to that is the guy that's going to hurt is Hamilton, Josh Hamilton.
Yeah.
Because Hamilton, Texas doesn't know what to do with
but
him.
But do you think – see, I don't think he'll go anywhere else but Texas. The Yankees aren't going to give him – he's not coming to New York because the Yankees aren't going to pay him. They don't want to go over that threshold. So
this is what I know. This is what I know about the Texas situation. In their heart of hearts, they'd love to sign him to a 2 or a 3-year deal.
Okay.
They're not going to have that opportunity because I've already been told there are 6 teams that if he sniffs free agency – will give him 6 years guaranteed.
Well, are the Yankees one of those teams? I would be
shocked.
No,
I don't think. I think this is more like Zach Greinke than it is, for example, anybody else. But this is what I know about Josh Hamilton. His success in the first quarter of the season has just made this more complicated, has not settled this. And the reason why I say that is when you look at what Hamilton has done, let's not even go to the addiction. Let's address the fact that he's one of the most injury-prone outfielders I've ever seen.
Exactly.
There was a study I did in the offseason when the Texas Rangers were thinking about Prince Fielder. And the idea, you know, Prince looks like he could, you know, hit a salad bar or two. And what happens is Hamilton is built like an Adonis.
Yeah.
And what has happened as a result of that is he is in a position where this is what happened. Prince has not played in any less than 158 games in the last 4 years, and Hamilton misses games left and right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any
sense. He was not
playing
in day games because he couldn't have the right eye black. So this idea that Hamilton's going to get taken out of his comfort zone because a team like Seattle, a team like Milwaukee, who's looking to make a splash, is still going to make money?
Yeah, that's...
See, that's why what you said about, and this is what got us on this tangent, when you say that the long-term contract is a thing of the past, there's always going to be a team that wants one.
Yeah, I just, and they're going to hurt.
Barry Zito didn't ruin it for Johan Santana.
This is true. He's finally pitching up to that contract. Well, at least he started the season pitching up.
Yeah.
But I just have one more. And I just thought this was an interesting question for one of my friends yesterday. And I found it so interesting that I wanted to get your take on it.
A real friend or a Twitter friend?
No. A real friend. We had a little conversation about it in the studio yesterday before Yankees batting practice today. And he asked me point blank, he wanted to know my opinion if Derek Jeter, if they were grooming him for a managerial position in the future. And my thoughts were that I think as soon as Derek is done with baseball, I think his traveling time with baseball teams is over. I mean, yeah. I don't talk to him. I'm not in the clubhouse every day. My partner is. Maybe he could speak a little bit more clearly on this, and so can you, because you're in clubhouses as well. But I just think it's my opinion, it's my gut. This guy has won 5 World Series, this year still notwithstanding, and next year as well. He could win another championship. If he ends with 6 championships, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's got over 3,000 hits. He's got nothing more to prove in the game of baseball. I wanted to know what you thought.
So it's interesting. Rivera says he wants to build churches in Panama, right?
Right, right.
Like, what is Jeter's next thing going to be? I could see Jeter at MLB Network. I could see him on the Yes Network. I don't see him getting into coaching or anything like that. If Mike Schmidt could go do a year in the minor leagues, every manager should do a year in the minor leagues. The only caveat to that for the people that want to see Jeter involved, we would have said the same thing about Mattingly when he walked away.
Right.
So that's the only argument, is that I don't see it now, but you know what? In 5 years from now, we might have a different opinion.
Seth, my question is more Yankee-centric here. Looking at Mark Teixeira and the way that he's started the season, he's in the prime of his career. His batting average has gone down and down every year. He puts up the power numbers, though. He continues to do that, and he's had the really slow start to this year. And they've got him for, you know, another 4 years. Is Mark Teixeira a major concern, or do you think the Yankees just need to let him, do what he's doing the rest of this year, see what they've got out of him, and then evaluate after that?
Well, you know, it's the only thing that you have an option to do. You're so locked into him that you really don't have a choice one way or the other. But this goes back to the argument of, this is where I thought first base would have been much better used by the Yankees. Over the course of the 8 years that they signed Teixeira, I wanted Jorge to play 2 of those years at first base. I would love Jeter to be playing first base there now, and then eventually I want to give Alex that spot.
Right.
Only because of the length of contracts. That was
right.
Only because of the length of contracts. And, you know, this was good enough for Pete Rose and Ernie Banks, so we're not degrading
them. And Mickey Mantle.
Right. I was just comparing infielders and shortstops.
Right.
But this idea that you're dealing with a player that you're still locked into, he plays every day. There's really nothing you can do. The only thing, like I said earlier, is if there is something medical, that would be the only thing that concerns me. Because when I heard that he's having trouble breathing,
yeah,
I kind of said, well, wait a second. That, to me, was a red flag.
Yeah, and he has been. He's been really gasping for air. He really can't even talk right now. And
he's
I see
really
him on a day-to-day.
He's a really good guy, too.
Yeah, and I see him on a day-to-day basis, and you can just see he's just not 100% right now. So I think the Yankees, you know, and to be honest with you, Seth, you know, Granderson spoke to him yesterday, and he said he's had a cough since spring training, but it hasn't affected him the way it's affected Mark, in the fact that he can go out and play and it's not affecting him. It's just when he talks to the media that he just, you know, and when he talks in general, that he's got this cough. But you know, the Yankees, like you said, they're, you know, they've had this little rough patch here with runners in scoring position. But it's all cyclical. I do think they are going to bounce back, like you said. But the biggest concern is that starting rotation. Past, you know, Sabathia, past Pettit, a lot of question marks.
Well, and I'm not going to assume that Pettit's going to be able to do that every fifth day.
Right.
He was great Friday night. And he actually wasn't too bad against Seattle. I just thought that it's the same thing with Andy. Same thing with athletes. I don't tell athletes to hang it up. And I was amazed, you know. When guys get hurt like that, like, this is my whole argument about Rivera. I felt bad for Rivera because I know the kind of rehab that it's going to take for him to want to come back. And that I'll be the first guy that says that if 6 months into this, he says, you know what, this is too hard, I don't want to do it anymore, I'm not going to hold it against him.
Right.
Now, for Andy to want to come back, all I said was I'd be the first one to tip my cap to him for the effort, but that doesn't mean I'm going to start projecting 10 wins for him.
Right. No, I hear you.
And I don't think it's appropriate for fans to. That's the issue with this rotation. Every day they go out, except for Sabathia for the most part, you're getting a question mark.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, it's amazing because even with the loss of Robertson and Rivera, the bullpen has kind of held things together. They've been okay. But they've lost a lot in the back end of the bullpen. The question marks, the issue with Michael Pineda not being able to pitch this year due to injury, they've taken a it's been a real hard time for the New York Yankees to start the season health wise and everything else going into 2012, and you know we're at a point now where they're just a little over 500. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out.
Just remember, there's no such thing as a long suffering Yankee fan.
That's true. It's true, Seth. Seth, it's always a pleasure having you on, my friend.
Well, it's a lot of fun. One of these days we're going to do this show in person.
Yes, definitely. And we know that you come up to Stamford, Connecticut, so we want to have you on the show. And,
Hour lunch.
And
Hour
take
lunch.
You take
no,
but, it to a nice...
Chris had the line. I thought it was Chris. If it wasn't, I apologize. But I thought Chris had the line when I started telling you guys that I was coming up there. And you said, oh, it's the great building by the water. I don't know about the Yes Studios, but I know this about the new NBC Sports Network. There's no windows in that place.
Oh no, we've got some windows here.
Water? Water?
Yeah, we've got water on our side of the building.
I had to look at
it about
just to prove that there was actual water. I'm like, there's a boat near there? I didn't understand. But yeah, I'll see you guys soon. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, and thank you as always. And just one, because I'm wrapping the show here, one thing I have to say is, let's go Devils.
Oh, listen to you. Yeah, just understand that I don't trash talk while the series is going on, but I will on Friday night.
All right, that's the great Seth Everett. You can follow him on Twitter, Seth_Everett, and he's also on the NBC Sports Network. He's an MLB insider, and he's one of the hosts of Spreecast. It's always a pleasure, and you are one of the reasons why the Off the Wall podcast has been so successful in its 140-plus episode run. So for the great Chris Sheeran, I'm Joe Auriemma saying we'll see you next time on Off the Wall.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.